T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
He'll get you the sports any way that he can. It's Mike Francesa
on the Fan. Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM WFAN.
We come to you on this Friday evening at 6 o'clock. Take your ride up to JJ at 7. Come to you, of course, brought to you by the good folks at Casamigos Tequila. Brought to you by those who drink it each and every day. We're here on the 3rd, which is very much like a holiday day. I played golf today and the place was packed. I mean, the golf course has been more crowded this spring than I've ever seen it, no matter where I've played. And no matter what course I've been on, it's been very crowded. And but today was jammed, and it was hot, really hot. And then just about 5 o'clock, I mean, I came back and went for a swim after I finished playing golf, and then the rain started. And I tell you, there's nothing. Since I was – and I grew up as a kid very close to the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, I lived on – there was no street between myself and the ocean. So I lived on the ocean side. So when I could walk down the block, and it was right there. So it was there in the summer, it was there in the winter, it was there all year. So I grew up on the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, I grew up in the beach. You know, that's all I know is the water. So nothing was better than after a sunny, hot day where about 5 o'clock – the skies would open and you'd get one of these wicked thunderstorms. We just had one here on the North Shore of Long Island. We just had one. Might still be going on, as a matter of fact, last hour or so. So drive safe if you're in one right now. There's a lot of them in the area. But there's just something about that summer, afternoon summer rain. You know, it's powerful. It's fierce. Doesn't last very long. Usually means a nice day the next day. Obviously, when it's late in the day, doesn't hurt very much, and cools things off a little bit depending on where you are. But like I said, there's nothing better than that wicked storm, when, as long as it doesn't do any damage. I mean, I didn't see any thunder or lightning in the storm, just a lot of heavy rain, and we haven't had very much rain. But those kind of storms in the summer, late in the afternoon, I've always been fascinated by those. And they, you know, you can almost smell the ozone with them. You can almost, you know, they have a smell to them. If you've ever noticed, if you've ever gone out in them, you know, we used to go running down to the beach in them, and you know, they were just always something special about them. That kind of wicked summer rain in late in the afternoon, especially after a very warm day. And today was a hot, humid, overcast at times, but still a hot, humid day. They're playing golf out in Michigan. Not a great field. But again, the guys who were the favorites are right there. You have Kirk, who I didn't know Kirk's story very well. He's back on. He won a couple of weeks ago on the lower circuit. He's been away with some problems, substance issues, depression. But he came back and he leads the tournament. He bogeyed 18. He was 13 under, and now he's 12 under. DeChambeau is right there, as we knew he would be. He was the heavy favorite this week. And Webb Simpson continues to play well, and now he finds himself, he and Kirk are both 12 under. A bunch of players are 11 under, including DeChambeau. Wolf's 11 under. Kisner's 10 under. Fowler started off badly today. He, I think, he's either 6 or 7. Let me see if he I hit the ball in the fairway on 18. I don't know if he birdied that hole. If he didn't, he'll be 6, which will he's safe to get in. He's 6. He shot a 71 today. He's 6 under. He's got a lot of work to do. I gave you one of my long shots this week was List at 135-1. You know, he's 8 under par, which puts him 4 strokes off the lead, puts him right now in 21st place, but tied for 21st place with a bunch of other guys. There's a whole bunch of players who were, if you get to 7, there's 30 players that are 7 under par or better, 7, 8, 9, a couple of 10s, a couple of 11s, and then a couple of 12s. That's Simpson and Kirk as they get ready to play the weekend. So that's what you got in golf. In the other sports, every day, you're going to continue the story. Today, 31 MLB players test positive. You want to say that's a few? You want to say it's not a few? Okay. The Heat shut down their facility. You got other players abdicating every day. Every day, there is going to be a challenge to all these team sports as they try to get to late July. I've talked about that in the last couple of days. It's going to be a very long couple of weeks here. As the country continues to break out, as the numbers in the country are and overall are staggering, yes, there are fewer people by percentage dying. The reason why the number that it's hitting is lower is in terms of it's younger. So they have a better cause and effect with the virus because they don't get as sick. And not as many wind up in the hospital, not as many are winding up dying since the number has been lower in the states as these other states have exploded, but exploded they have. And remember, this is only the first wave. There's a belief that there is a second wave coming. So, I mean, this is, again, all the things that these leagues have to deal with. Do I think it's a foregone conclusion? The people I talk to in the sports, I think what I would say is they're guardedly optimistic. I think they all know that it could shut down. I think they believe that something will happen to the better and they'll get a chance to play. Here's the one thing. The last couple of days before these teams take the field for the first time will be real gut check, soul searching time. Because they're going to get together, the owners, and they're going to say, okay, are we in it or not? If we're not committed to stay through the storm, if we're not committed to face some challenges here and some health issues here and some fights here and some issues here and some bad press at times here, then we should shut it down before we start. Because the one thing, as I've told you, is there's a good chance and even a solid chance that these things might not get off the ground. But when they start, it will take Armageddon to get them to shut down because that doesn't work for them financially. There's enormous pressure on baseball to get to the postseason. And the NFL, obviously, they come from a position of power. They dictate. See, the other networks, the other sports need the networks. The networks need the NFL. The NFL can go anywhere with their game. They can always find a suitor. Now, I'm not saying they don't try to make sure they have the networks in a good place. They do. They're not dumb. They know who their best customers are. But they can go anywhere with their product. Their product is king, and they know it. The other sports, they know that they get in line behind the NFL, way behind the NFL. And this year, remember, come November, these networks expect to spend a very good amount of time in early November dedicating their coverage and their resources to a presidential election. That is a good 7 to 10 days of very heavy coverage in the last weeks. Before, after, etc. A lot of manpower, a lot of technical manpower. So that's a very big thing. And an important thing, one thing that they know they have to spend resources on. So you have that and you have the NFL in November. They don't need a lot else. They're not really looking for that much else. This year they do have something special. They will have the Masters. And the Masters is big enough to say, hey, we're here. No one no one ever bats an eye at the Masters. They say yes. The other networks would crawl to get the Masters. CBS will never do anything wrong to lose it, but and they will always cater to the Masters, but there is a long line that would jump. They'd walk over hot coals to get to the Masters. That's how big that event is. But nothing's going to happen there. They love CBS. But the point is, you have the NFL. You have the Masters. You have the presidential election. That's a very, very, and we don't know about college football yet. You've heard a couple of guys say, hey, I'm just as comfortable playing in the winter. A couple of coaches even said it today. I could play this fall, but I can also play this winter and the spring. I'm fine with that. They said they've even said they're fine if it's February, March, April. They're okay. They're fine with the spring football schedule. And remember, the spring quarter is a very light quarter. The spring quarter becomes very light, other than the NCAA tournament, for network stuff until you get to the NBA. And there's plenty of room there. Plenty of room in March. Plenty of room in those time of years for stuff. So that would work well. So they know they will be treated very well from a TV standpoint if they move to that spot, which is still very much up in the air. And these teams can talk about getting spectators in. Hey, my answer to them is crawl before you walk. Get the product on the field. Get the games underway in an orderly fashion, and then worry about a way to get the spectators back in your stadium. First things first, get the product on the field first. It's going to be hard enough for you to do. This is obviously kind of an extended anniversary weekend for the fan. They have stuff, they have shows all weekend for you. They have guys doing shows together who used to work on the fan. They're bringing back hosts. They're bringing back some stuff. Like there'll be a Mike and the Mad Dog Hour on Sunday night. There'll be presentations from other shows. I don't think they're doing any IMUS. I think they felt that, to be honest with you, I think they felt that in the way IMUS went out and the climate of the country right now, that it didn't work right now to use IMUS, even though his body of work is much greater than just the end. But I think they decided that it wasn't just the right time. So because anything that is done that honors the anniversary of the station should also include IMUS. And IMUS, I'm sure you'll hear in some bits from time to time, but it should always include IMUS because he was that integral, as I've talked about the other day. There's no history of the station. There's no station without him there to be the foundation. He was the foundation from which we launched everything, including Mike and the Mad Dog. Would there have been a Mike and the Mad Dog without IMUS? There could have been, but I don't know if there would have been a fan without IMUS. That's the question I can't answer. I think there could have been a Mike and the Mad Dog, but I don't know if there could have been a Mike and the Mad Dog without a fan, and I'm not sure there could have been a fan without IMUS. So when you add one and one together, the answer might be, or there's a very good chance it might be, that there never would have been a Mike and the Mad Dog without IMUS. And he was an integral part of our success because we both worked on his show previously to being together. And we made appearances into his show through the years periodically. He'd come on our show, we'd go on his show. I think we went on his probably two times for every one he came on ours, maybe even three times the one he came on ours, but we'd go on. There were big events or stuff like that. We'd go on and, have a little fun. So he should always be remembered. I mean, and I'm sure, I think people understand who have followed the station, what his role was. But you hear a lot of different things like Dave Sims and Ed are doing a show together. And I think Steve and Russ Salzberg are doing a show together. And I'm sure there's a whole bunch of different ones that I haven't remembered that will be there too. So a lot of the old ones will be a part of this weekend including some stuff. So you'll hear some old Mike and the Mad Dog bits, which they have. They told me what they have. A lot of the Mike and the Mad Dog post 2002 or 2003, because the first years when they trained, when they had so much stuff, they sent it to a place, and a lot of it was stored and destroyed by accident. It was, you know, in those days you had it was a very big issue of storing stuff. It's not like it is now. You weren't living in a digital world at that time. And they had, it took a massive amount of storage space to store all this stuff. And a lot of the early stuff, a lot of the 80s stuff, 80s and into the 90s, didn't make it. Most of the stuff is pretty much after 2002, pretty much right up to when Dog left. So a lot of 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He left in, I think, if I remember, it was August of 8 when he left. So, I mean, that's a, you know, those are the basic years you're going to hear most of the vignettes from that you hear with the Mike and the Mad Dog stuff. There's a couple of things that are older, but not that much. So I'll be with you until 7 tonight. I'll have time for calls. We'll get it all rolling right after this. All right, we're back as we take you right up until 7 this evening on this July 3rd, on this holiday weekend. And again, as we said, the fan will be basically remembering its 33 years and having some anniversary highlights and some blasts from the past over the next couple of days, so keep listening for that. You know, to me, there's certain words that just, you know, you have favorite words that just conjure up images. And you just like the images that are conjured by the word. Like my favorite word in the English language is summer. Because when you think of summer, do you ever think of anything bad? You think of, you know, brilliant sunshine. You think of pleasant activity. You think of, you know, long days, warmth, you know, whatever it may be, the beach. You know, if you're a horse player, Saratoga, golf, whatever it may be. But to me, nobody thinks of anything bad when they think of the summer. It's always positive. It's always vibrant. It's always, you know, exciting. That's to me the summer. My second favorite is freedom. I mean, that's to me, it always has been. I mean, the worst thought I've ever had in my life is, could I imagine being locked up? I could not even, like, you never see, when you watch any kind of movie, when you see people get incarcerated, you say, my God, could you imagine spending 1 hour in a place, in a cell or something like that, and just having your freedoms taken away? And my third is game time. You know, always looking forward to the next game. And we've had that taken away from us for a very, very long time now. Way too long. And hopefully within a couple of weeks here, we'll get back to where every day and maybe round the clock for a while, because everyone deserves that. And let me say this. I've told people this. I've had this discussion with people in our industry, the broadcasting industry. I think if games are played, the ratings on radio and TV are going to be enormous. I think people are starved to have games back. They will, I mean, and if it's big games, you know, playoff games, Stanley Cup games, or NBA games, or even, can you imagine, tell me you wouldn't sit home tonight and wish that you had the Yankees playing, you know, the Nationals, or the Yankees playing the Mets, or the Mets playing the Phillies, or whatever, tonight when I get off the air, 5 minutes of the game, game time. Hopefully only a couple of weeks away. And what goes quicker? What has ever gone faster in your life than summer? Winter's the same length as summer. Does winter ever feel like the same length as summer? Do February and July ever feel like the same amount of time? I mean, summer's gone in a blink. Just in a blink. All right, Marilyn Bernie. July 4th. We got July 4th numbers. Because baseball is a July 4th day. And can you have, from a Yankee standpoint, Bernie digging in July 4th, 2004 against the Mets, batting leadoff, as a matter of fact. Mets won the game. 6-5. I think it was a Ty Wigginton game, if I remember right. I think he had a big hit in the game. But Bernie led off that day. It was Bernie Jeter. Went 4-for-5, had a homer, 3 RBIs, 3 runs scored. July 4th, 2004. 40 years before July 4th. And the Yankees won a pennant race that whole year, with especially the Orioles and the White Sox. July 4th. And who would be a more of a symbol of July 4th? If baseball, just like the beach, if baseball is the setting of a July 4th, who is more a setting of a July 4th baseball game than having Mickey Mantle at the plate? 8th inning, Yankees trail the Minnesota Twins 5-4. Bottom of the 8th, Al Worthington on the mound. Jim Bouton, the pitcher of record for the Yankees, on the losing side. Bouton, obviously, the guy who writes Ball 4 and exposes Mickey Mantle in a big way to the world, as a matter of fact. But here's Bouton on the losing end, Al Worthington, a journeyman. A guy who was never very good but pitched 14 years in the majors. One of those guys who hangs around. You know those starters who hang around? And you say, boy, how's that guy still in the majors? Well, that was Al Worthington. So here he is. And Mantle strolls to the plate in the 8th. 2 on, 2 out. Elston Howard on deck. Well, instead of doing what a lot of guys do and walk Mickey, he gets one that Mickey can reach, and Mickey hits a 3-run homer into the deck and right in the bottom of the 8th, and the Yanks go on to a 7-5 win over the Twins. And the winning pitcher is Jim Bouton. So there's Mickey having 1-1 for Bouton with a 3-run homer in the bottom of the 8th, pulling it out against Al Worthington on July 4th. A lot of Yankee fans went home happy on that day. I think that game, let me see for a second to make sure that game was played in Yankee Stadium. I just want to make sure. So somebody will call me on it if it turns out it was played in Minnesota. I don't think it was. I think it was played in Yankee Stadium, but let me make sure. July 4th, 2004. 7-5 Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Game lasted 2 hours and 44 minutes. Imagine that. Game 7-5. The starters both went into the 9th. Well, Worthington pitched 8. Bouton gave it up after 8 and let Pete Mickelson, remember Pete Mickelson? Pete Mickelson got the save. And the Yankees won it 7-5 with the 3-run homer by Mantle in the bottom of the 8th. And Bouton won his 7th game that day. And the Yankees went to 44-30 on the season. Mickey lost the MVP to Brooks Robinson that year. Brooks had a great year. I thought Mickey had an MVP year that year. He hit 35 homers, 111 RBIs, hit 303. His last big year. The last year, he was really Mickey Mantle and, you know, had the pretty big series, 3 homers, 8 RBIs in the series against the Cardinals, but they lost in 7 games to the Cardinals. But that great Cardinal team. And then that was the end of the dynasty, as we know. Mickey hung around for 4 more years. If you go to the day before on today, Mantle had 2 homers on this day in 1958. And again, 2 homers, 17th and 18th. In 1959 for Whitey Ford. In 1958 for Whitey Ford. He went 2-for-3 with 2 homers and 4 RBIs. And Whitey Ford went to 10-3 on the season. And, you know, the old adage was that when Whitey pitched, Mickey homered. That was the old, you know, the old story all the time, was that whenever Whitey pitched, Mickey seemed to always have a home run. Maybe it just seemed that way, but it just seemed that way a lot. All right, let's get some calls in. Blair in Maine starts us off. What's up, Blair?
How you doing on July 3rd?
Okay. What's going on? What's up?
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Nothing. My thing is, here, I want to get to baseball, but we may not have it because Mike Trout is a well-known player for the Major League Baseball, and...
Oh, thanks. Listen. I was in a good mood tonight. You're bumming me out with your call. Thanks. Bye. Goodbye. Please. Joe in Jersey. What's up, Joe?
First time, long, long time.
Yeah, thank you.
Mike, are you familiar with the Star Ledger in Jersey?
Excuse me?
The Star Ledger, the newspaper.
I'm familiar with it. I don't read it, but I'm familiar with it, yes.
Sunday or so ago, they had baseball, the all-time team. These 26 players make up the ultimate roster in the history of the sport.
Well, I mean, you've seen them do the 30-man team, you know, a couple of years ago. They did the big 30-man team on television, if you remember. So you saw that one. That's the last one I had seen, but okay.
Gold Glove is conspicuous by his absence on this team.
Who is?
Someone who you both love. We both love. You love him and I love him.
Who?
The Mick.
Well, that's just ridiculous. That's just dumb, okay? I mean, but all it is subjective. That's all. I mean, you know, so they decided, what outfielder did they take over Mickey Mantle?
Okay, they had, of course, Willie, Babe. Let's see, the other outfielder is... Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have it. They only had three outfielders?
Bonds, Barry Bonds.
They only had three outfielders?
Yeah, but listen, they had eight guys on the bench.
So, Joe, and they didn't take Mickey Mantle. Listen, you know what? They're just dumb. I mean, so listen, but again, it's just somebody's opinion. Who cares? I don't care. Okay, you know, what's the difference? Who cares?
One of their criteria was the best 7 years of a player's career. And if you take Mickey's only.
Listen, if you go 51-62, offensively, Mantle blows Willie Mays away, okay? It's not even worth discussing. Now, Willie Mays was, and I'm not starting, and thanks for the call, and I'm not starting a Willie Mays-Mickey Mantle argument because it's silly, okay? They're both two of the greatest players of all time, but they were very different players. Mantle was not the defensive player that Mays was. Mantle was a guy whose wheels were gone before he was, you know, 32 years old. Willie had better years late because he kept himself in better shape. Mickey dissipated himself. He had bad injuries, and he was a drunk. We all know it. Okay, he was a big liver. Willie took care of himself. Give Willie credit for that. And Willie had better years later. We all know that. But if you want to talk about them, this is the way to look at it realistically. Mantle was a better offensive player. Willie was a better all-around player. That's all. Willie was a better base runner. Mickey was a good base runner. Willie was a dynamic base runner. Willie was a better defensive player. Okay, he was a better defensive player, no question about it. Mickey was a better offensive player, no question about it. Mickey was a better offensive player. Mays never reached the heights that Mantle reached offensively, never. So, I mean, it doesn't matter, though. They're both two of the greatest players of all time. Why pit them against themselves? Why pit Mantle and Mays against DiMaggio? They're all that great. So listen, if you cut the team down to only three outfielders, most likely your three outfielders are going to be Ruth, Cobb, and somebody. Maybe DiMaggio. So you leave Willie Mays off that team. You leave Mantle off that team. You leave Frank Robinson off that team. Or Stan Musial off that team. You didn't even mention Ted Williams might be the greatest hitter of all time. So, wherever you cut the team, you're going to leave somebody off it. That's all there is to it. So it's, you know, it's really silly. You're talking about in baseball, over 100 years, if you go position players, there have probably been 50 great guys who we can fight about. 50. Here's how I would look at it first. The first way you're on that list is this. At one point, you had to be the best player in baseball. Okay? There was a point at which there was not a question in the world that Mickey Mantle was not only the best player in baseball, there were people calling him the best player who ever lived at a certain point. He did not sustain that long enough, but he had years where he was on that level with power and speed. 56, 57, those years, he was utterly brilliant. A switch hitter with dynamic speed and dynamic power. With a 500 on base percentage and a, you know, 1.1 or 1.2 OPS. I mean, again, why bother? It's not to detract from DiMaggio or detract from Mays or detract from Williams or any of these guys. They're all great. That's why those lists are silly. But the criteria has to be this. To make that team at one time, you must have been the best player in baseball. Otherwise, I don't think you belong on that list. So that's why, to me, a Pete Rose would never be on that list. Because Pete Rose was never the best player in baseball, ever. He did it for a very long time. He played more winning games than anybody. Played more games than anybody. Got more hits than anybody. But he wasn't the best player ever. He wasn't ever the best player on his team. Mike Schmidt was better when he was in Philadelphia. There were Johnny Bench was, and Joe Morgan were better when he was in Cincinnati. That's how you judge it. But again, you know, they cut the team to 26. Somebody left Mickey Mantle off, okay? I'm not going to leave Mickey Mantle off any team. That's just me. But again, I'm not trying to start a fight about who's better between two players because it's a silly argument. Whether you want to do DiMaggio, Williams, whether you want to do Mantle, Mays, I mean, or put Hank Aaron in there. How does Hank Aaron not make the team? But Hank Aaron never makes anybody's team. Joe in Jersey, what's up, Joe? Ira in Staten Island, what's up, Ira?
Hey, Mike, what's happening? Boy, you're so right. A blink of the eye, the summer's gone.
But, you know, Ira, it's funny you called today because I saw something today and they were really rapping Sam Darnold. And you know what I said is, with the injuries, with the coaching, and with the lack of players around him, how has anybody given Sam Darnold a fair shake yet? I mean, who has played with worse talent around him than Sam Darnold has for 2 years?
100%. Like I said, you can't make up the mind.
Look at this. Look at this year. Look, doesn't he have a great wide receiver core? Look at Tom Brady's wide receiver core this year, and look at Sam Darnold's wide receiver core this year.
That's right. And of course. That's why to get a fair evaluation of him up until now, it's just he doesn't get one.
It's not fair. And his offensive line has been total. Now, they fixed the offensive line, but how about getting him somebody to throw the ball to?
I think they'll have somebody. I think something's going to go down.
Who has worse wide receivers right now than the Jets?
They're shaky at best. If anything, their slot receiver Crowder is probably the best receiver.
Yeah, he's not bad, but they have no dynamic. Look at Tampa's weapons.
Oh, forget it. Forget about it. You know, if they get the season started off on time, I think Brady.
Hey, the numbers he's going to put up, especially with the coach he's got calling the plays. There is no more aggressive play caller and down the field play caller than Bruce Arians in the NFL. That is going to be a lethal offense this year.
I mean, easily they should average over 30 points.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. You know, they were in the 30s almost every week last year. They will be there for sure. They are going to put up huge numbers this year.
They certainly will. But, you know, I just want to get you on this one.
Go ahead.
You're talking about all the sports trying to get started, and I know it's a big hurdle right now. But the NFL's had a free ticket. You know,
yeah, they have.
Free agency, they had the draft, the schedule, all this. But now, I don't know if you saw today, the Players Association is putting up a little bit of a score.
Yeah, they don't want any preseason games.
There you go. And if you look at it, they're also spelling out the way they want camp. And if they want 21 days of conditioning, and then they got about 10 days of unpadded practice, and about another 10 days of padded practices, you know, it's kind of pushing towards whether they're going to start on time. It's going to be interesting to see.
I'm telling you, I have never felt the NFL is going to start on time. I think the NFL's had in its back pocket to start on October 15th forever, and I think that's the smart move on their part. And look, I expect college to push. I expect the SEC to make the first move into spring with their season this year.
I think it's the smartest thing. Listen, we've discussed it the last couple of months, you and I, Mike. It's just, you know.
You back up the clock, you got a better chance that they solve the problem.
100%. 100%. Get the vaccine out. Get these guys, you know, healthy. Get the kids back in school after January in college. You know, let them do the reverse.
And you know what I would do right now if I was the NBA? If I was Adam right now, I'd announce that season starts on. I'd announce that the season's over and the season starts on Christmas Day.
So you'd trash the bubble?
I think the bubble's getting trashed anyway. You know what? They're looking now at a secondary bubble. They've already lost a lot of money, and Orlando's going crazy.
Well, you know what? You're probably right. And you know what? Baseball's going to struggle. I mean, listen.
If I was the NBA, I would say, you know what? I'm going to get so little out of this. And there's so many headaches. Look, the Heat closed their thing today. And Orlando is raging right now. I mean, that's where they put the bubble, and now they're talking about having a, you know, the idea of maybe having a secondary bubble city, and the idea that what happens if Orlando is raging with cases while they're playing? What about the people who are surrounding the area there? How many of them are going to get inside and contaminate the bubble? People who have to work there, people who have got to go inside and outside and travel there, and that city is putting up thousands and thousands of cases a day.
Yeah, you can't do it. And you know the players. You got 20-year-old guys that are playing sports. They're going to go out.
They're going to go out. And you got guys saying today that players start. You just saw Earl Adapo say he's not playing. And you got other players saying that at best they're cautious. At best they're cautious about playing.
Well, you know what, Mike? If you could present me where we have a vaccine Christmas time or January and all these sports wait until the springtime to start, I'd sign on the dotted line.
You know what?
The smartest thing for everybody.
I agree. You know, listen, we all miss it terribly. I understand that. We all can't wait to these games again. But the worst thing that could happen is that they stop and start. They start and stop. That could be, that is the worst thing. Or one of these players gets very sick.
Oh, God forbid. Oh, that would be a disaster. Disaster.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, I don't think we're there yet. I mean, we'll see. I think it's 50-50 whether we start. And here's what I'll say, though, because I've been told this from pretty strong places. If they start, they won't shut it down.
Well, they're going to take a lot of heat if things go bad. I can tell you that. The PR and the media will be ruthless to them if, God forbid, something happens to somebody. You got to remember, you got a lot of coaches and managers. They're 65 years and older, and some of them got health conditions.
All right, right now, as of today, knowing what you know about the Jets, what's their record this year if they play a full season?
I'll go somewhere between 7-9 and 8-8 at best.
Okay, but not you think at least 7 wins?
Yeah, I think they could squeak out 7 if they stay healthy. But it's so hard to project. You don't know what's going to be. But you know what? You know what, Mike? I think I'm going to hold up on that. Of course, I don't think they're going to have enough time for the offensive line to gel. So I'd say between 6 and 7.
All right. Thanks, Ira. Norman Peekskill, what's up, Norm?
Mr. Francesa, it is an honor to speak to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Since the outset, since 1987. Quick little story. You were talking about the spots with Imus. And I remember as a kid, 17-year-old kid, listening to you and Imus, falling off my chair, listening to you guys, going back and forth. Wonderful. Great.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We did.
Great, great radio. You really inspired me over the years about your work ethic and your determination and your confidence is awesome.
Well, I appreciate it.
And it's helped me because I'm a musician.
Okay, oh, really? What instrument?
I'm a vocalist, all right?
Oh, okay.
I play for a band called Whiskey Child, but I'm not going to plug them.
Okay, you can give them a plug. What's the name of the band?
A band's called Whiskey Child.
Okay. Okay.
And we have a song called Hippie Girl on YouTube.
Okay, Whiskey
Child.
I'll just
say that right
okay.
now.
There you
and,
go. What's on your mind?
It's called Hippie Girl. Big Jet fan. Huge, huge Jet fan. Been suffering Jet fan. I believe, though, for what they've done and for what the GM has done, Mr. Douglas, he seems more competent than the last one that we had. I feel like the Jets can go 9-7.
Well, listen,
the communication lines are good with, Gase and the defensive coordinator.
I think and thanks for the call. I think the offensive line is clearly much better. I think it could be markedly better. I think it also could be cohesive. I think he put role players there. I like guys who are versatile and tough on the offensive line. I think those are the guys he got. I don't need the best player on the offensive line. I need a bunch of guys who will play together, who like being a unit together, who have some camaraderie and are versatile, where they can jump into different spots for each other. If a guy's hurt, I can move over here, I can move there. I can play guard, I can play tackle. I can play guard, I can play center. You want to have that kind of versatility. You need it in your 8-man unit that you're going to have on that offensive line. I think that's there. I think that's improved a lot. Defense has a chance to be good. They still need an edge pass rusher. If they're healthy, they could be good on defense, although they're still a little lacking in the pass rushing department. And then on offense, they need a lot more firepower, a lot more, to be fair to Sam. They just don't have a game-breaking player. They need one in the worst way. Back after this. All right, we're back. Squeeze a couple more calls in. Roscoe in North Babylon, go ahead.
Yes. First of all, Mike, I just want to say thank you. I was in the Army as the head Army trainer for the recruiting battalion when you guys first came on. All we had was AM, FM radios. I drive from Fort Hamilton, sometime all the way out to the Hamptons or Riverhead. But, man, listening to you guys on the radio kept us going. I did retire from the Army in 93.
Right.
I did two shows I remember very well. One, when we had the conversation about Spalding's and Pinksy Pinkies.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
Best one? Oh, man, that was probably the best show I heard.
Spalding, Pinksy Pinky, that's it. I mean, those are, if you know stickball, you got to know both Spalding's and Pinksy Pinky, and you got to know the difference.
Oh, man, and listen, there was different ways of playing stickball.
Absolutely.
The wall at school.
Absolutely.
Like fastball.
Well, but that was a bad strike zone because, you know, the against the wall strike zone was bogus because you could throw it in high and then drop it into the strike zone.
That is correct. That is correct. I used to play at Christ the King. I think you and I may have been around about the same time. I graduated from Springfield Garden in 1970, and I went to St. John's University. This was in 1970 before I went into the military.
Stickball's a lost art. You know that? That is a lost art. There was nothing better than stickball. Was a great game.
And if you didn't play stickball, you played punchball. So I mean,
yeah, but stickball was the game. We loved to play stickball.
Absolutely. Another thing was y'all talked about, I actually think it was a Mad Dog who was always complaining that you couldn't be a Yankee and a Met fan. Well, I was a Yankee fan in 1960 and became a Met fan in 1962. And I'm still a fan for both teams, the Yankees and the Mets. I'm a New York
fan. Well, I can tell you this. My brother John, who took me to Yankee games and was a huge Yankee fan, Cleet Boyer was his favorite player, and my brother John's a great baseball fan, but when Steinbrenner came to the Yankees, Steinbrenner rubbed him the wrong way, and he became a Met fan, and he's been a Met fan ever since. And wow. I can tell you, though, he breaks down in the World Series sometimes, and he can't root against the Yankees. I can tell it's still in his blood a little bit. But he became a Met fan and stayed a Met fan all those years. But growing up, he was a huge Yankee fan. And yeah, he used to take us to the games because he's 6.5 years older than me, so he used to drive us to the games. And he took me to a lot of games. Took me to games in 63. Took me to games in 64. Took me to doubleheader on Labor Day 1964 with all his friends, and they let me come. And he was like, you know, 16 going on 17. I was 9, and took me with all his older friends to the games. And we sat in the upper deck in left field as the Yankees swept the White Sox on Labor Day to move into first place in 1964. Never forget it. I can remember sitting there yelling at that left fielder who used to strike out all the time, Nicholson. Everyone was yelling at him because he struck out like 5 times in the doubleheader. Big Swish Nicholson, and I remember it to this day. He took me to the Polo Grounds to see Pete Rose play. So he took me to Shea Stadium to see Willie McCovey play and the Giants and Willie Mays. So thanks for the call. So I'm glad you're doing well, and thanks for the memories. But so many times, and what we used to love to do, when he was old enough to drive, and it was him and me, and I'm 6.5 years younger than him, and then I was 18 months older than my brother Marty, who's deceased. John's still with us, doing very well. He would say, let's go to the doubleheader. And we'd get up at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and whether it was the Yankees or the Mets, we'd go there, be there in time for batting practice. And they'd have batting practice before a doubleheader in those days, unless it was very hot. Once in a while, they wouldn't have batting practice. But we'd get there, we'd buy seats, we'd get the best seats we could get, and we'd stay there for the doubleheader and be there all day. And how good was that to see two games of baseball? And I remember seeing the Giants in doubleheader. I remember seeing the Cincinnati Reds in doubleheader, the Pittsburgh Pirates. I remember Yankees, White Sox, Yankees, Twins. I remember going to games in 62, 63, 64 that way. So, you know, until he got old enough and then, you know, he was busy doing other things. But in all those early years that I went to games, the times we got to go to games, it was him who took us, and we always go to the doubleheaders on Sunday. That was it, because we're getting a little value for our buck, and we'd go and get two games, and we'd stay there for both games of the doubleheader, and the three of us went a bunch of times. And those are, you know, really, when you think about it, those are great memories. You know that, and I've taken my boys to games since they were 3 years old. Okay, I've been taking them to games together, and they've been fortunate enough to be a lot of games. But I've been taking them to games with me since they were 3 years old. Now they're 13 and 15, and they still love to go to games. So it's something that, you know, gets passed down generationally through the years. And listen, on the 4th of July weekend, that's what it's about. It's about, you know, father to son. It's about baseball, and that's what baseball does. You know, it bridges those gaps, and it gives you something. You know, it's an old thing from the Billy Crystal movie, where in the City Slickers movie, when he says, you know, during the Vietnam War, when I had long hair, my father and I couldn't talk about anything. We couldn't agree on what day of the week it was. We couldn't agree if it was daytime or nighttime, but we could talk baseball. And that's the common denominator. And, you know, it is something that is handed down. And that's something that baseball has that no other sport has. Those kind of memories are memories that last a lifetime. And listen, I remember going to a couple of football games when I was a kid, but you don't have those same kind of memories that you have at that time of year, being outside all day and going to ball games. You know, going to see the Indians and the Yankees. When I begged them to stay for three more innings, even though the Yankees were getting destroyed in the second game of the doubleheader, to see Mickey Mantle hit again and watch Sam McDowell strike Mickey out on three more pitches. I think it was like the third time he struck out. It might have been the fourth time he struck out in that game, in the second game of the doubleheader. 65, I think it was. McDowell was unhittable. And just staying around to see him hit one more time, you know, and he stayed and let me watch him. So you remember those days very, very, very well, and I thank them for that, because that's how we learn baseball. You know that? And that's how all kids learn baseball. All right, Casamigos Tequila, as always, brings you the program. We thank you for that. JJ is next, followed by Steve Summers. Congratulations to everybody who's coming back for the fan weekend. So it's good to have everybody back as part of the team, even for a couple of minutes. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Have a safe and a happy holiday, and we'll see you then.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.